grandpa, some opas just lose all interest in whether their kids are involved or not. We won't be mean about it.
Well, let's just keep an eye on Quincy Notre Dame girls golf here in the next decade or couple decades even.
Oh, okay.
We got the pipeline coming.
Yeah, you've got a pretty deep bench on those on those girls, don't you?
Yeah, so
that's... Okay, why am I not getting you in your microphone? Why Scott may have to come in and help me. Why are you not picking up?
You want me to switch to another mic?
No, you got it. Now, say something again.
67 years ago, our forefathers.
Very good. I gotcha. Okay. Don't try this at home, folks. I'm a professional. As you can see, I'm not needed because you don't need me because, well, you don't need me because Jack Freiberg is here, Chuck Schultz is here, and I'm just here doing nothing, actually, not even running the board very well. But anyway, we want to start out. We're going to get to politics in a moment, but we want to start out about a wonderful project that is rising before my eyes across the street at 4th and Main, the addition to the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County History Museum. Jack Freiberg, I know you sit on the board of directors. Can you give us an update? I know money is still needed.
Yes, money is still needed. The project is steadily moving along. We have just hired a national firm, a professional firm, TWB Enterprises, to help us fundraise. They're going to be working on more of the what I would consider national accounts, going after grants for accessibility, and working in addition to the local stuff, big donors on the national level, people that our fundraising committee didn't feel we could reach properly. So they're going to be in there working.
So are these people with ties to Quincy or ties with history in
general? No, they have done, for instance, a very successful campaign with the Bloomington Historical Society, and we got in touch with them via them. They went way over their goal, helping them on their fundraising efforts, and got several recommendations from them. We interviewed them, and they are now in the process of interviewing our board and people that have been our long-term supporters to get a feel for where we are on projects.
The bicentennial, of course, of Adams County is here and going great. Oh, the other day, you'll be happy to know, I was voluntold that I would be reading selections from 1st, 4th, 8th, and 12th graders in Adams County, answering questions. What do you want to be when you grow up? What is Adams County going to be like 200 years from now? What's your favorite toy? And surprisingly, a lot of kids still play with old-fashioned toys. You know, you thought it'd be all video games and stuff like that. But a lot of kids still like to play with what we call traditional toys. Like,
good dear.
Yeah. So I don't know what they were expecting, but it's just a way to... And this is going to be part of a time capsule. This is what kids in 2025 were thinking. The first graders are especially cute. I can't mention the name, but you'll probably know exactly who I'm talking about. One fourth grader was asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? And usually they say an astronaut or a NBA player or something. This child said, I am going into my family business. I will be a businessman, and I will be working at the blank blank corporate headquarters along with my dad.
Awesome.
It was like, okay.
And I say that's the kind of attitude we need to have here in city.
You know, it really was
interesting. I bet that's one happy dad when he heard that comment.
You know, one thing I was surprised about, and it's the way you asked the question, of course, because children tend to all want to be a fireman or a policeman or, you know, something like that. But very few children answered that they wanted to own their own business, which I thought was something that maybe in the future the school systems in Adams County should work even harder to let kids know you can own your own business, because unless they had a dad, I'm going to go work at the corporate headquarters.
Well, but the CEO program here in town is doing
absolutely
a very good job of promoting that idea. And, you know, Roger Lienert's had that, and Curtis has it now.
Yeah.
And it's a situation where those guys are great leaders and are going to be great educators, and that's the kind of education that's boots on the ground for the kids. And I'm really proud of that program, and I know those guys are.
So, Mary, my law partner, my son Jake, in fourth grade, he went for Halloween as me. And he had a beard.
That's a scary thought.
He had a little briefcase. He had a suit on. And that's one of my favorite pictures, is the two of us posed together like that. But, you know, in referencing this young man you met, his dad's got to love that. And good
Absolutely.
For him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's the sort of thing that's really a compliment to both of you, Chuck.
Yeah, I mean, it was really great. You know, this kid's like, and it was a long, you know, this fourth grade said, I am going to be a businessman. I am going into my family business. I will be, you know, I will be working at, name the company, name the headquarters, office location. You know, it was great. So,
well,
but
I hope
now,
that young man is around when we dig that time capsule up.
Well, he's in fourth grade now, so we'll see
Very
what happens.
Good chance
it's
he'll
a
be
50
around.
Year.
Now,
I
will say that some of the students may not have been as well supervised, because an eighth grader at Payson School, when asked, what do you want to be when you grow up, said, I want to be a trash can at Walmart. So I don't know what that's
We got a comedian.
We got a comedian in our midst.
We need those two.
We need those two. But it was interesting.
So
their favorite book, their favorite, you know, stuff like that. It was really interesting. Boy, these seniors, boy, did they read some heavy-duty stuff.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, our theme is educate, celebrate, commemorate.
Right.
And we've been having some great celebrations. Had the honor band this past Sunday, and a huge turnout. And so for your listeners, we have six high schools in Adams County. We had the best musicians from all six in their own school uniforms, and we called it the Adams County Honor Band. They played with our Quincy Concert Band, which is awesome. These, you know, the best musicians around. And it practically filled up Morrison Theater. The music was great. These kids all got a certificate and a little trophy that they're part of the honor band. So anyway, we have got, that's under celebrate. Jack has been doing yeoman service here under educate, and under commemorate, that time capsule, along with, we went to the Park District recently for permission, another project right across the street. Now I'm talking about the southwest corner of Washington Park. That's where we're going to commemorate the six United States presidents who visited Quincy while president. We also are going to note some famous presidents who were here before they were president, like Abraham Lincoln.
John F. Kennedy.
John F. Kennedy, Ulysses S. Grant, Franklin D. Roosevelt. But the six presidential visits are going to be marked, and there's a grid there, so that most of them all occurred right around Washington Park. So McKinley spoke in Washington Park. Teddy Roosevelt spoke across from the courthouse. As we remember, Obama was at the Civic Center.
Right.
Clinton was right on the middle of Main Street there with everyone in the park. So it's all going to be laid out there with a little bit about each one, and all of which are very interesting. And we'll have that there forever. And I want to commend, you know, we've had so many great volunteers on this bicentennial process. So we needed somebody to research that and write that up. And Amanda Van Ness did that.
Well, fantastic.
Yeah, God bless her.
I know Harrison Monuments is doing a lot of the
Oh, Daniel
the
helped design the whole thing. And then, of course, we got our monument at the courthouse, which will be the timeline of Adams County history.
Yeah, that's going to be big, gigantic.
We couldn't have done it without her.
Yeah, I know. That's where I got voluntold. Natalie Henning said, Mary,
yes,
you love the bicentennial. Read all these
She's
things.
She's been great on this.
She has been great.
She has been terrific.
She's
to
been
work
terrific.
With.
And, you know, I don't mind. I mean, I loved it because it was fun. She had to go to that monument convention, you know, so she left me in charge of reading all those things. I'm like, well, I couldn't be happier. I thought, what'll that take me? 30 minutes, 40 minutes?
Well, thank you for helping.
6 hours.
6 hours.
Well, I wanted, you know, I was trying to do a good job.
Well,
you know, it's just
it'll
amazing.
Be there forever. It's
but
a part of history.
They're so disparate because one of the things was I was supposed to try to, you know, crystallize it down into like maybe three or four answers. Seniors, these kids, the books they read are from Pillar and Post. I mean, they're just, there's no hardly three, you know, three alike, much less, you know, three that jump out as the top. So I was very impressed with the amount of literature that children read in Adams County, the amount of, well, of course, Wicked, you know. That'll be great, because when we can you see 200 years from now, or whenever they open this thing again, What was Wicked? You know, they'll all know. Hopefully, The Wizard of Oz will still be something that children read. But it was really, really funny. And I also learned a little bit about kids' literature because I've heard of Piggy and Elephant, but there were a few that I just hadn't heard of. But they're beloved. Oh,
Captain Underpants.
Captain Underpants. Yeah.
The only way that you know that is if you have grandchildren, because they let you have it with both barrels, whether you want to hear it or not.
I know all the Disney princesses. I think.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, tonight is Disney Princess Night at the patio.
How about that?
You could take your princesses
Ryan
to
could
see
do
those
that.
Princesses.
No, my granddaughters have not put me on to Moana 2 yet. Which is, I think, the latest Disney princess output. But and I have trouble keeping current. I mean, because Disney has an enormous amount of output.
Well, they do. And then, of course, they never go away because you've got them on demand
on
Disney Plus. So, you know, the old Cinderella still comes back every once in a while.
Well, isn't Snow White coming out as a live action?
Right.
How about that?
I'm saving my marriage by not making a comment.
Oh.
I could be the wicked. I could be the evil stepmother in that.
I would
be perfect for that.
Is that called typecasting again?
Yes,
Chuck?
That's called typecasting. I could be so evil. So we've got the project going across the street.
Another one in Madison Park to commemorate. You know, there's always been one in Madison Park across from Madison School, which was the site of the Mission Institute. Underground Railroad Station number 1, and that marker will remain. But there were 3 students at the Mission Institute that did something that had never happened before throughout the anti-slavery movement. They actually went across into Missouri, a slave state, to induce slaves to escape, and they were caught. They were convicted. John Marshall Clemens was on the jury, father of Mark Twain. And they were sentenced to prison. Jeff City became a big national deal. And Thompson, Work, and Burr. So we have the Park District's already approved that one.
Yep.
That one's going up soon. But we'll be doing St. Mary Hospital site, Maplewood School in Camp Point, the old Lincoln School in Quincy, which was our African American school,
which is on the campus of Blessing Hospital.
Blessing's doing that, and they're paying for that. They're doing it for us.
The plaque that's going up at the Golden Windmill, explaining the history of that.
Oh yeah, that's great. It's all Adams County.
Yes,
I
right.
think that's
really
right.
all over the county. We've had some amazing stories from these schools all over the county. Paul and Jane Moody have this amazing history of 219 one-room schoolhouses. But everybody had to be able to walk to school. There wasn't any other way to get there,
well,
so they had to have
horse.
One everywhere.
Ride your horse, yeah.
Well, I don't think they're riding their horse to school. Maybe. I know that my wife's grandfather, Fred Cook, who started Illinois School Supply, he taught at a one-room schoolhouse in Marblehead, and he did ride a horse to deliver the mail in those days. He was a graduate of what we now call Western Illinois University, but in those days, Western Reserve Institute turned out all our local teachers.
That's right. It was known as a teaching school.
Absolutely.
Just like Normal.
Yes.
Normal school.
That's exactly. I went to ISU, and the history there of it was exclusively a teacher school. Earlier.
People wonder about that Normal name. You know, my old boss, Senator Simon, used to collect newspaper headlines. He was a newspaper guy. And there is a town in Illinois called Oblong. And one of his favorite headlines was, "Oblong Man to Marry Normal Woman."
And see, as ISU students there, you know, every band that came in was a major band. They would always get up there and the lead singer would go to the mic and would say, "We're so happy to be back to normal, you know." And that was just something that came with going to a concert there.
Did Normal mean Teachers College, or I mean, how did that Normal? That meant no matter where you went, if you went to Normal school, it meant teachers, right?
Yeah, and I don't know.
And
the
that's why the town was named Normal,
right?
Yeah. Okay, so how interesting. So we're going to have all these plaques up for the bicentennial. We're going to have more work being accomplished to make the History Museum at 4th and Main handicap accessible with that brand new addition put on it. There are so many great things going on.
May 10th, Mary, will be this big City of Refuge celebration. It's an interfaith concert at Morrison Theater, and it's really going to be something.
Yeah, Dr. Nathan Seaman has been working on that.
He's written an original piece of music for that, hasn't he, Jack?
And he is incredibly dedicated to this, and he's a pretty amazing guy, actually.
But
and
it's hard for Quincy people to understand the reverence that the Latter-day Saints have for our city, because they know their genealogy, they know their history, and Quincy, as Joseph Smith said, will be held in their everlasting remembrance.
Well, if it wasn't for us, they wouldn't have probably made it out to Salt Lake, let's put it that way. And I have family members that are Mormons, and we're having a family reunion this year, and we're going to do some of the Mormon attractions around town, so I'll be calling the History Museum to get a little extra push. But it is true. Now, who are these big guests that are coming? I keep hearing that there could be big LDS dignitaries on the horizon. Are you ready to announce anything?
No, I can't speak to that. I imagine they'll announce that ahead of time. But obviously, you've heard my story about getting a standing ovation in Salt Lake City. And that was President Hinckley, but they all have ancestors that were here.
Because that was one of the questions. I went to lunch with Nathan and Delene Seaman one time, and I said, you know, I had relatives that were here then too. And there have been quite a few books that have been written about that, about their stay in Quincy and the whole migration process out to Salt Lake. But I don't think there's a list anywhere to talk about who stayed with whom or the particulars of all that.
Well, that would be great. And if anybody could find it, it'd be the Mormons. Because the only reason we have following your roots, finding your roots,
the best genealogical
ancestry
resources
DNA,
on Earth.
Because part of their religion is they have to find their ancestors. That is part of their religious quest. And so they know the family history back as far as they can get it.
Way back before you could go online.
Yeah.
My dear mother, great genealogist, she would go to Salt Lake City and hire a guide for 3 days of work in their library. I've been in that library. Your records are in there. Jack's are, mine are, all of our listeners. It's all there. It's incredible.
Well, I often get off as Mormon light. And the reason I say that is because I've been around Mormons most of my life. So I know just how to dress and just how to act so that they'll think I'm a sister. And so when they call me sister, I'm perfectly happy. And because I went out to the world headquarters in Salt Lake City.
So you didn't dissuade them at all.
I did not dissuade them. I didn't lie. I just said we'd love to go up to the viewing tower. And
they can't do enough for you. You know what that reminds
me? I should have just told them I was from Quincy.
They
wouldn't have cared if I was LDS
Do you remember Reverend Warford?
Yeah.
Great man. Bill Warford was a longtime Protestant chaplain of the Illinois Veterans Home, and he was on the State Senior Citizen Council.
Yeah.
Never missed a meeting. And I knew Bill very well, and I never saw him in a clerical collar. But when he went to Chicago for the meeting on the train, he always put his collar on because Father, you don't have to wait in line. Come on up to the front. Oh, Father, you don't have, the lunch is on us, Father.
Protestants pretending
to be Catholic.
Let me
get that suitcase for you, Father. Well, in Chicago, if you got a clerical collar, you're pretty much golden.
Yeah, well, I remember we were at the Rose Bowl. And a nun was the sister of one of the Illinois coaches. And even my father, the agnostic of all time, I guess.
Hard-bitten newsman.
Unsampled by claimed no lineage there, even bought that little old nun breakfast one day at the Hilton in Beverly Hills. So we've got to take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk about more things that are coming up. Again, May 10th, did you say? May 10th.
It's
Mark
Sunday
your calendars now. And there's going to be Chautauquas. There's going to be a big event.
Well, September 6th. And
the Beach Boys coming?
The Beach Boys are coming
to
Adams County.
Signed.
But there's only one left.
Well, they put on, it's going to be the 40 top 10 hits that we all heard and loved.
I saw them 4 or 5 years ago in Ravinia, and they were terrific.
Okay.
The crowd loved them.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if they're the real Beach Boys. They're Beach Boys enough. Right. Will John Stamos be with him?
Possibly. Oh,
yeah, John Stamos was with him when I saw them.
Yeah, that's what makes...
And I couldn't believe it when he came on stage, the way the women...
My granddaughters all watched that. What's the name of that show? Full House.
Yeah. Full House, yeah.
Yeah.
Uncle Jesse.
You know, it's kind of like when Jack Freiberg and Chuck Schultz walk out into a big crowd.
I don't expect a lot of swooning, do you, Chuck?
I really haven't got that reaction. It's been a few decades.
It is 9:40. We're going to take a break, head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative, see what's happening on our farm markets. And when we come back, we are going to hear all about what these boys think about the mayor's race and about some other bicentennial events coming up in Quincy. You stay tuned. Nine forty-one, 47 degrees. Nicole is always so cheerful and happy. Could it be the farm markets are rebounding?
Good morning and happy Friday. We have May corn down 6 at 463, July corn down 4 at 471, May soybeans down 7 at 1006, July soybeans down 7 at 1018, May wheat down 1 at 555, May lean hogs up $1.05 at $89.65. May feeder cattle unchanged at $289.10. And April live cattle up 78 cents at $209.25. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for our next market update.
Thank you very much, Nicole. We're going to go right back to the Mary Griffith Show. Chuck Schultz has to dart, as he says. He probably has a paying client. You know, Freiberg doesn't have a thing to do, but Schultz actually still works for a living.
Still working for a living, yes, ma'am.
But I want to get to the Quincy mayor's race. You two are old-time veteran politicians in our area, observers of politics in our areas, for many years on opposite sides of the poll. But I believe the mayor's race could have caused a fusion or union of the Freiberg-Schultz franchise. Let's start with you. Former mayor of Quincy, Chuck Schultz.
Well, Jack and I agree that we have a great opportunity to elect someone like Linda Moore, PhD, former vice president, ESPN, you know, somebody that, now we did recently find out, oh my gosh, she paid some young men that are helping, trying to work their way through college to distribute some of her literature. Like, is there something negative about that I'm missing? You know, what people may not know, Mary, you could look on the university's 990 and find out. She's one of the largest donors to the university and to the athletic program, probably in the history of the school. I mean, I'm aware personally of $150,000 donation for the soccer program, for the new field. So it's natural she'd be wanting to, you know, if she's going to hire somebody, she'd rather write a check to some college boys rather than the United States Postal Service. So anyway, I thought that was much ado about nothing. I think she's run a real good campaign. I think that it's clear to me that we need to get back into the right direction in this community. And, you know, she's being accused of being, God forbid, a Democrat. And believe me, I'm the one that suggested to Kyle Moore that she be our next city treasurer when Peggy Krim retired. And it had nothing to do with her being a Democrat. I knew her because Coach McKenzie said, you should meet this woman. And I did. That's why I recommended her to Kyle, and Kyle made a good decision there. But it had nothing to do. If she was arrested for being a Democrat, she'd have been acquitted for lack of evidence. Because she had no involvement. I mean, I could tell. So anyway, he picked her because she, you know, when you get a city treasurer like that, and she did a great job. She's the one that straightened out the insurance mess. When he had, you know, friends of mine, employees of the city, longtime employees, go into the hospital and they say, sorry, sir, you don't have any insurance. I mean, that's outrageous. That's what got the no confidence vote. It was those people calling their aldermen saying, we got to get a change. So I think we have a great opportunity to move forward on April 1. And as I've said many times, there's no Democratic or Republican way to sweep the streets. Let's just hire a professional that's going to get us headed back in the right direction and get us working together, and no more of this fighting the city council every Monday night.
Jack Freiberg, you've always been a Republican, and you're going to vote for independent.
Well, I'm voting for somebody who is a moderate. And moderate politicians can be very successful from either side. I look at Chuck, elected three terms, obviously a Democrat, but elected three terms as mayor. on the Republican side, I look at a moderate like Jim Thompson, who was elected to four terms as Illinois governor, and who is considered a very effective leader. I think Linda falls into that camp in being a moderate and really not wanting to commit to either side. And that brings up another topic, is should the R&D be tagged in local politics? And I was talking to somebody yesterday. He said, I remember from my eighth grade civics book, they talked about how in towns of around 50,000 and under, that there really should not be R&D tags on politicians on a local level, because it could, in fact, over the long term, add bitterness to the whole process in the local community.
Well, it's hurt our recruitment of people to run. They don't want to declare a party and have to join up and participate in fundraisers and that sort of thing. We don't do it for the school board. We don't do it for the park board. You know, because there's nothing about it. There's no Democrat or Republican way to sweep the streets.
I mean, can you imagine somebody on the park board, for instance, criticizing them because they voted for one on either side? You know, in Linda's case, they've criticized her that she voted for both Biden and for Kamala Harris. And I'm telling you, that has zero, absolutely zero, to do with things on the local level. I mean, someone's voting history has zero impact on that.
Now, let me ask you this, though. And I mean, I put myself in a position where I feel like I have to at least give Mayor Mike Tropes' other side, you know, just to play devil's advocate. What's the guy done wrong? He's been in office for 4 years. We've got a target.
Tried to politicize the Police and Fire Commission, which, you know, that was set up to take the politics out of the departments, because years ago, everybody in a fire department was somebody's nephew. Now we have professional, objective criteria that is a merit selection. He tried to take that away from the Police and Fire Commission. That was wrong. The way they changed the city insurance, Mary, when you change the city insurance, you got to put out requests for proposals. You got to have public hearings. You got to meet with the bargaining units. That's required. And, you know, all of a sudden everybody wakes up with a new insurance carrier and everything is, you know, messed up. You tried to blame it on the hospital, tried to blame it on the clinic. But, no, it was his guy that he brought in.
Linda got in there with boots and gloves on and cleaned that all up.
She's the one that straightened it out.
Well, okay. But he did save $1 million.
But I don't know anything about
it. It's the unintended consequences. I asked this question at the League of Women Voters. Yes, no doubt. You know, we saved $1 million when the insurance, self-insurance was failing, but the unintended consequences. So let's talk, you know, leadership style. What I hear from both of you is it's not a political partisan thing that's driving
Schreiber.
It's
the
leadership
issues.
Style. You just think that she has a better leadership style than
Bring
Trump.
People together and collaborate. In 200 years of history, we've never had a vote of no confidence by the city council on a mayor, but we had one on this mayor. Now, is it the council's fault? Is it the mayor's fault? I don't know. But I think we need a fresh approach to getting everybody to work together. Linda's talked about working with the school district and the park district and the county all together to save money.
Because we're all pulling the same direction and really
paying the same tax bill.
You know, if you're paying a tax bill, And things are going well for the city, does it matter what party, you know, you belong to? I don't, on a local level, I don't think that's relevant. I really don't. And
so
I don't think it ever has.
You're not denouncing your lifetime Republicanism. You're just saying in this case, you're voting for someone who is not a Republican.
I mean, if you've got somebody that is doing a competent job, has worked in that department, Lori Gershwinder is about the only Democrat that I'm aware of that's in this county, but she was the obvious heir. She'd worked in that office for years. And at a local level, I don't care who you are, I want to vote for the most competent and the best qualified person for that job.
Okay, now the next question is, because I know, Chuck, you have to leave, but who's going to win? Okay, we all know that you guys are hoping Dr. Linda Moore wins. Who will win April 1st?
I really don't know, because I haven't campaigned for office much in the 21st century. I know how to run a campaign.
Staying alive.
Yeah. You know, it's different. I don't think either campaign has a real traditional ground game. I think it's going to be mostly advertising. And now, of course, you got all these other platforms to reach people. but it's hard to get a finger on it. But I do feel it's pretty competitive, and I think Linda's opponent must feel the same heat because it seems like they might be getting, you know, concerned.
I'm going to tell you that I went from she's got a shot to I think she's going to win. And I talk to a lot of people in my life, and they're from different walks of life. I mean, I'll go to the Mississippi Valley Hunters and Fishermen's Association meeting, and then I'll go to something else that will be a whole different peer group. And I can tell you she has some wind in her sail. It's just as simple as Quincy has a lot of different family types, a lot of different lifestyle types, et cetera. And I think she's going to have a broad enough base that I do think she's going to win.
Okay.
Jack has a better feel for that than I do. He talks to everybody, and he's predicted very accurately in the past.
For instance, I said it was going to be close, but Dan Brink was going to lose, if you remember when you asked me that question.
I do remember you said that, yes.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, it may just be Jack.
Yeah, I'm going to sign off. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Chuck.
See you next month.
Always great to see you. Well, you just heard it there, and I'm sure Jack Freiberg knows a little bit about that as well, all of these great events that are coming up monthly at the Historical Society and at John Wood. Again, our bicentennial. And Jack, you've been such an integral part of this. And, you know, I was reading the 175th birthday edition of Adams County recently. I came across something about that. What is the one thing that you hope this bicentennial does to bring us together as a county? Is it going to be, I think it's a source of pride for a lot of people.
It certainly should be. I'm very proud of it because my family goes back so far here. I mean, my great-great-great-grandfather came here in 1833. So most of the time that Adams County has been Adams County, I've had a relative here. You know, it should be a source of pride for all of us, really. I mean, Quincy has a rich history, our connections to Lincoln, the riverboat and the history of the riverfront and how it evolved and how it put Quincy really on the map to begin with. I mean, we've got six presidents have visited, and it's going to be commemorated with a plaque, which we've already talked about. It's just a rich history here. The early Germans here and their impact on the city. There's just a lot here.
There is so much here, and I think part of the problem is, and as a native myself, I can speak to this, I'm having my family reunion, and I'm talking about all these things we can do. Now, these people, some of them were born in Quincy and moved away. Others were not. Their parents were born here, but they were Army brats and Air Force brats and stuff, so they never really lived in Quincy, came back for the summers. They're not aware of our Underground Railroad connection. They're not aware of our brewing history. They're not aware of this. And I think that if anything happens out of this, it'll be that our local crowd, like they surveyed all these kids for the bicentennial, they'll at least know, hey, something important happened here. I'm from this stock.
But see, also on the book committee, and the book committee met with the coordinator for us from Acclaim Press, and they have already sold over 1,000 books for this event, for this bicentennial event. I asked him how are we doing in accordance with these other different books that they do commemorating cities or counties,
right,
or what have you, and he said it's record setting for us. I mean, you've brought an enthusiasm and a depth to this book that frankly we seldom see, and
because everybody's included is part of the reason.
Well, we're trying to be as inclusive as we can. History of businesses, histories of families. I mean, you know, there's just
some
a lot
here
hard,
to though,
discuss.
Because history's lost, like the Native American culture that was here. It's very difficult to document it's just hard.
And I'm going to plug something. The second Wednesday of every month at John Wood Community College, we have a speaker series Last week, last speaker was Arliss Dittmer talking about Loretta Eno and her World War II history as a nurse, because she was there at Pearl Harbor and what have you. This next month, the second Wednesday, is going to be George Cukard talking about the diseases of Abraham Lincoln, but addressing what you just said about the Indians, and a program that I'm actually very excited about seeing is in October on that second Wednesday. We have a guy from Dixon Mounds who's going to be talking about the Fox and the Sauk and the Potawatomi that were here before European settlement. And I know that they were here. I don't know anything about the details of how they were here and how John Wood's relationship with them, et cetera. And I think I'm going to find that program fascinating.
Well, by the time John Wood got here, of course, it wasn't like it was the wildest of the Wild West. You know, I mean, Indian tribes were getting along pretty well with white settlers.
But it was still the wilderness. It was still the Western wilderness. I mean, John Wood walked here from New York, if you can imagine that.
With his axe and his awl.
You know,
anybody who's been a docent knows the story.
And I'm telling you, that would be no easy project for anyone.
No, it wouldn't. It's kind of like my family. They got off the boat from Ireland and started walking. And when he got to Janesville, Wisconsin, he said, "I'm damn tired. I think I'll just stay here for a while." Jack Freiberg, thank you so very much. Thanks to Chuck Schultz. Folks, it's the third Friday of every month. It's the Jack and Chuck Show. And we hope you'll join us again next month.
Thanks, Mary.